accession number 19089, Reel 4.
Stephen Kennedy, Reel 4.
We arrived at the top of the escarpment, and there in front of us was this aerodrome with a number of aircraft, and C Squadron, the squadron I was with, was to the actual left of the actual runway, and B Squadron had the job of destroying the aircraft. So they ran up and down, and eventually two aircraft did take off and managed to get away, and there were about 15 aircraft left on the ground, and they were ordered to destroy them. So they machine gunned them and ran over their tails, and it was quite a victory to be able to destroy so much equipment. Now, we we didn't have contact with the Australians. We were within, say, 5 miles or so of the fortification on this aerodrome, and the road, the tarmac road, that the Germans and the Italians had used to get further to the east, was between us and Tobruk. We had to harbour up that night, and we just got the tanks all together at night time in the darkness, and the petrol lorries, and a pal of mine, Mick Merry, and he's still with us happily, we were both tank commanders, and we got out on the ground and we walked forward, and we could hear the actual Germans, and we listened to them, and they were digging in within earshot of us, and we went back and told our squadron commander. And the funny thing about it, that two or three of the officers had got into the turret of one of these tanks, and they had a bottle of whiskey, and they were enjoying themselves. And we kept telling them, the Germans are digging in, and said, oh, we'll deal with it that dawn. Anyhow, we waited until dawn, and the petrol lorries were all, the tanks were lined up, and we were just about to disperse, when the Germans attacked us, and they had these mortars, and they were fired at us with these mortars, and they destroyed a number of our soft-skinned vehicles and hit some of our tanks, but luckily they didn't destroy the tanks, and we had to disperse at random with no control. We seemed to have lost control. We just had to look after ourselves. And I was, what the idea was, to get back up onto the escarpment and spread out a bit away from the, because the Germans were coming back from Saloum and Bardia. And I was just about to go back, and one of my other mates, his tank had broken down and he wanted a tow start. And I said, oh, go, you appeal to us to give him a tow to start him, or to drag him out of the danger area. And we'd hooked on the tow rope and we were pulling him, and all of a sudden this 1500 weight truck with a flag flying on it pulled up beside it, and it was General Campbell. He said, untangle that tow rope, you windy bastard, and follow me. And he took us up onto a ridge, and there was a couple of other tanks there with nobody in command, and then he went in his little armour car and his 1500 weight, he disappeared. It was absolute chaos. We then eventually stayed on this ridge. Nobody came to us, no control, no radio communication. And eventually everybody was heading up over the escarpment, and eventually we got down to where there was a convoy of our own people and a headquarters, I think, and they told us to disperse and go out into our formation. But I remember at that time, just on that, that there was a dogfight between one of our Hurricanes and a German fighter, and the German fighter shot down the Hurricane right in front of us, most despairing to see. And we then got back to this, well, you could say a group of people. They didn't really know what they were, they're from. They were just remnants of the bits. But there was, luckily enough, there was, I think he was a major at the time. He afterwards became a general, General Pip Roberts. He was in our, he'd been our adjutant, but he was a general later on. And I think he was still a major when, at this time. And he said, he saw us and saw us here with the same regiment as him. And he said, I'll hook you up and see if you can contact the regiments that were to our east, the first tanks were to our east. And they're running very short of tanks and I can't have you hanging about here. So I'll send you to them. He gave us the map reference and there was myself and just another chap from Northern Ireland, another sergeant, two sergeant tank commanders and two tanks. And he ordered us to go to this map reference where we'd contact part of our other regiments that we were going to help. We were headed towards that regiment, to that map reference, I should say, and we were within sight of where we should be, when all of a sudden, from behind the lorries, we saw a convoy of lorries and said, oh, this must be the B echelon of where we're going to. Out came some German tanks from behind the lorries. One of them opened up on us, and we did the 50mm gun that they had was there. We stopped for a minute and all of a sudden some other tanks came out from behind other lorries and I said we better turn about and get a bit of range. So I turned around and this other chap turned around and we headed to try and increase the range and they hit our tank in the back. And our tank went up in flames from the engine. High octane petrol, you can understand, on the big 50 gallon tanks. Went up in flames, so I had to evacuate the tank. I said, just get out to my crew. We got out of the tank and ran a bit, and we thought we were lost because we didn't have anything. We didn't even have a water bottle. But this other chap, who'd gone down about a quarter of a mile, in his bravery, he came back and picked us up. And we got on the back of his tank and he took us back to where that convoy was. And that was the first tank that I'd lost at Sidi Rezig.
Was anybody injured in your crew?
And we weren't injured, but they were spraying us with machine guns. We could see the bullets landing on the desert around us. Fortunately, we weren't hit. And he managed to get us up on the back of his tank and we got back. And then we then got back there and eventually we sorted out, they sorted out the regiment and we got back to the convoy of our regiment. We had no tanks left at all and we went back into Egypt again for a certain amount of safety. And later on then, as you know, the Germans, they had taken all that area and they started to get beaten. The infantry tanks, that was the Valentines and Matildas, were beating them. They beat them out of Saloum and Derna around Tobruk and the Australians then joined in and the Germans retreated to Gazala. And there was a stalemate there for quite a while. Presumably, both sides were building up their forces. And we were back in the desert. And
had you re-equipped with new vehicles?
We had no equipment at this time at all. And all of a sudden, we were told that we were getting German Grant tanks.
General Grant tanks?
General Grant. Now, these General Grant tanks, they had a main gun in the turret, and they had a sponson to the right with a 75, a copy of the French 75mm gun from the First World War. In this little sponson at the side, which had a limited traverse and elevation, and they were copies really from First War World tanks with a bit of modernisation on them, and we were equipped with them. And they were extremely primitive. The sighting for the 75mm gun just had a telescope, like a periscope, and it just had 1, 2, 3 in it, sort of thousands of yards, no adjustments or anything like that. And we had to learn to basically sight these tanks. And up in the turret, we had this a main gun, a 35mm gun. And we then had to advance. And you've heard in the Knightsbridge box, south, we had to form up south of the guards' Knightsbridge box at the Gazelle up front. Now, we were in a very open position, and we were equipped with these tanks, and we had to go forward in the daytime. But the Germans, who had dug in on this Gazelle up front, had got these 88mm anti-tank guns, and their Mark IV tanks had larger guns, and even the lightest tank had a 50mm gun, so they had a much greater range and penetrating power than our tanks. And eventually we were up there, and we went forward in the daytime and then stayed all day in the, you can imagine the haze, and you know what it was like on the desert. You couldn't see very much in the middle of the day. And we withdrew at night and filled up with petrol, and probably come into contact with the other regiments, which were to the right and left of us. And then in the morning we'd go forward again. Now,
what would you go forward for, just to hold ground?
To get onto a ridge to hold ground and to be in visual contact if you could. But the range was so great that if you went too close, you're bound to lose your tank. I'll explain in a moment. We had one of our officers, the Honourable Somebody, an aristocrat, and he, in my troop, the other tank, he was the troop leader of my tank. I was the sergeant, the troop sergeant. And his crew said, he's a most horrible person. You know, we're strictly rationed and we can only have food at certain times and a certain amount of food. What he is, he's getting up before us and eating all our food. And he said, he's a big fat fella and he guzzles the food on us. And he didn't seem to have any instructions or anything. But all of a sudden, I don't know whether it was Freemasonry or what it was, so they got him back. You know, they took him off and they sent another young officer who had only been up a couple of days, a young lieutenant, to command the troop. And during the next day or so, we were ordered to advance. Now, we're more experienced ones, like myself and the other sergeant. Leafy Lane was the other sergeant in with me, and we would advance slowly. But this young officer, his first time in battle, he shot forward in the Grand Tank, and he went too high up on the little ridge or mound that was giving us protection. Well, these 88mm guns opened up on him, and it wasn't only a few minutes before the tank went up in flames. And I can remember the turret of the tank flying through the air like a gigantic saucepan. Now you can imagine that, the turret of this massive turret with the main gun sticking, sailing through the air, and the other part of the tank in a mass of flames, and the whole lot of them were all killed. Now, the next day, there was only two of us then, and the funny thing about it was that Sleepy Lane and I were up on that ridge, and the remains of that tank was there, and all of a sudden the regiment, and the squadron I should say, that was part of us, withdrew but didn't tell us, leaving us there, never gave us orders to come back, but they, for some reason or another, they withdrew back a few miles. And then when it got dark and we had to get back to refuel and all, we ended up with the 3rd Hussars. And they immediately refueled us and all. But I can remember being in the 3rd Hussars, and overnight they didn't like strangers with them. So in the morning we found out the map reference of our own regiment and we got back to them. So then that overnight with the 3rd Hussars. Well, we had to, dawn come, and you had to spread out air formation straight away because these bombers were over. And the Germans were all powerful then, as you can well imagine. But anyhow, the next day, I, on the ridge again, and we were ordered to go forward again to try and take more ground, went up over a ridge, and all of a sudden, a brace of fire from enemy tanks. First of all, if you know the turret, there's what they call the cupola. It's the two lids that close down and they've got little vision places. A 50mm round gouged out there. There's my head. And you just had your head sticking up out of the turret. Gouged there, missed me completely, but the shock of it caused me to fall down.
So missed you by a few inches?
Missed me by a few inches, and the gouge was still in the tank where it had gouged out the armour plating as it went on. Anyhow, I fell down into the turret, and of course the thing, the crew thought I was coming in headless. Eventually we recovered and went for another hour or so, and the next thing was that there was a terrific outburst of fire again. And the German tanks had advanced still closer to us. And all of a sudden, we were attacked again. And the Grand Tank, it had the driving sprocket and the final drive with all the oil gear for the final drive, and like the differential of a car in the front. And it was heavily armoured there, but a 50mm round, German round, had gone into the centre of the oil bath, as it were, and we didn't know what to do. We couldn't do anything. The moment he started up the engine and moved, the oil poured out, and we were told, I was reported that the tank was hit and it was immobile, and what we decided, what could we do? And the wooden bung for the 75mm gun was about the exact same size as the hole in the front of the Bendix drive in the front. And we managed to hammer in the wooden bung into the hole. And it would hold when we were ordered back, and we were told to go back to a recovery unit, a squadron, told us they were busily engaged. They told us to go back, to give us a map reference, to go back to a recovery unit, Remy. We went back to this recovery unit. This bung kept coming out after every quarter, half a mile or something. We'd just go and bang it back in again. Eventually we got there, and they thought, oh, they'll weld us up again, and we'll be back with our squadron with a big blob of weld. And there was no mechanical damage, just penetrated the oil part of the system. And eventually, we were there, and all of a sudden they said, abandon the tanks, get in the lorries. We're off, back. And we were back to, right back to Saloon, right back. And this is when the Germans attacked and started to move forward into Egypt. And
so that was the attack at Gazala?
Yeah. And this was started at Gazala. And we were with this Ramey, my old crew, and we got back to Bardia, and there was a holding unit for all these people that had been knocked out, and infantrymen that had been wounded, and Bardia. And then we were taken all the way back into Egypt. And
so you just abandoned the tanks that you had?
Oh, they left them. They really left them. They couldn't take them anywhere. They just abandoned them there. And we went back then all the way to... We were separated. Our regiment was still fighting all the way back. But we were taken back to these recovery places, all these spare soldiers, back all the way back to Egypt again, onto this transit camp, as I told you, halfway between Alexandria and Cairo. And we were there. And eventually... The whole force that moved back, all the force that moved all the way back to El Alamein. The Germans had come right and they'd taken all the little towns, Mers and Matruf, Fouca, Derna, they'd taken the lot of them. And they were then at El Alamein. And We were ordered back eventually and went back by lorry, and I was given another Grand tank, and we were on the Ruwaisid Ridge. That was the ridge overlooking to the south where the enemy would come round. Our great tactic was coming round the south, and we were up on this high ground looking down onto this open ground, and we were equipped with these American tanks. And we knew the Germans were going to attack, and all our other regiments and all infantry were all up in the fortified part. The Australians were at Telalisa, and then further down were the South Africans and New Zealanders, and a lot of the British all lined up there. And we were down on the ridge. And Wendell Willkie, who was a American Secretary of State, came to visit us because it was all American equipment, and more American equipment was arriving, and he had the know-how, and he was telling the generals. And we had American troops come for battle experience, but it was the greatest laugh going. These Yanks, they'd flown all the way to Brazil, came over from Brazil to Freetown in Sierra Leone, all the way across to the Sudan, and then up to Egypt. And they were equipped with all the personal luxuries that you could imagine. And there we were eating our bully sandwiches and waiting for an evening stew. And I can remember there was a Sergeant Rigby, and he was a big 16-stoner, and he was from Boston, Massachusetts. And he was telling us all about their trip and what they were, you know, the wonderful equipment that would be coming. And he said, "When are the rolling kitchens coming?" And he'd laugh. Our rolling kitchen was a 3-ton lorry, and I can remember our SQ mess at that time, and he's still alive, and he's a good friend that, see, I haven't seen him for a good while, Frankie Ord. He was the SQMS, and he used to bring up this bully stew. Well, you can imagine when you're starving all day, that was lovely. And I can remember the Americans getting this. They had the most elaborate sort of dishes and portions for the food to go on to and everything. And he said, and this big blob of bully stew came onto their dishes. And they said, well, I won't say it and the thing, but their comments were rather crude. And anyhow, they were there, and they just lay about, and we were standing to for dawn, and they didn't realise the seriousness of the position we were in. Well, anyhow, later on, a week or so afterwards, the Germans attacked. Now, down on the low ground in front of us was the King's Royal Rifle Corps, and they were equipped with the latest anti-tank gun that we had. and they were in lovely dug-in positions on the lower ground, and they had their vehicles, their 1,500 weights that had towed these guns, and the Germans started coming round. Well, they sent reconnaissance vehicles first, and these people, the infantry at the time, opened up with their anti-tank guns, and they knocked out quite a number of them. I don't think the Germans expected that they would have been dug in so near to them, and they really created havoc. And they brought on some more Mark III tanks around, and with our help, firing from further back, and mainly the infantry with their anti-tank guns, they destroyed them. And suddenly there was a big area of destroyed German equipment, which was a great boost to our morale, and the Germans started to withdraw. Instead of coming round the south of us, they went back and formed a straight line back against the reinforcements that we've got. And we were there for a few days, and then our regiment was really worn out. And all of a sudden, I got ordered, we had to go to RHQ. Now, General Montgomery had just taken over the 8th Army, and we had to go back. Our regiment was going back somewhere to rest and to be re-equipped, but a certain number of us were picked. Myself, that Corporal Fraser, a young officer, Lieutenant Molden, and Trooper Keenan, and then two other crews. Now, what had happened, this is a story. Remember the very famous young Lieutenant Colonel that raided Rommel's headquarters, came in from the sea, the SAS.
Is it Geoffrey Keynes?
Geoffrey, yes. The youngest Victoria Cross. He had raided Rommel's headquarters, and he was killed there, but the other people withdrew, and they passed on a lot of information to headquarters of the 8th Army. Now, the 8th Army was very near the coast, the headquarters, GHQ, near the tarmac road, and they formed a protective detachment. GHQ, Army Protective Detachment. It had a little artillery group of anti-tank guns, infantry, company of infantry, and we had the job. We were GHQ troop of the Tank Protective Detachment, and we